Christian Piccolini has spent the past few years trying to reform white supremacists through a group called the Free Radicals Project. The nonprofit was born from Piccolini's own experience as a neo-Nazi in the 1980s and 90s. But now he's making what he calls the difficult decision to shut the project down at the end of the year, even as he acknowledges racist extremism remains a major threat. Christian Piccolini is with us from Chicago to talk about his work and what comes next. Welcome back to Here and Now.
Thank you, Callum.
You know, we've spoken with you before on this show about the urgency of countering white supremacy. So why shutter the Free Radicals Project now?
Well, after almost 20 years of having worked independently one-on-one with people who are trying to leave hate movements, I've now worked with hundreds, maybe over 1,000 people. It's become clear to me that a shift in focus is necessary. What I've noticed is if we don't switch focus to focus on prevention, the process of radicalization is quickly overcoming us, and we're seeing too many people line up at our door for help disengaging when we really should be focusing much more heavily on prevention so future generations aren't moved towards that movement.
Are you thinking about your own experience then? I know you've described in the past being radicalized as a young teenager at a vulnerable, you know, age in youth development. Is that where your focus will shift to young people before they are actually immersed in a hate group like the one that you fell into?
Well, I think absolutely young people are the ones that are the most at risk, I think, for radicalization because they're searching for a sense of identity, community, and purpose. We also have to look at older generations who are becoming radicalized. So I think as a society, as a nation, we need to really look at what is either pushing or pulling people in that direction and find a way to shut off that spigot, I call the bigot spigot. Until we fix that, there's no amount of de-radicalization or disengagement work that can put a dent in the number of people that are becoming radicalized.
I see. Have you figured out what that will look like then? Is it a social media focus? Is it more speaking engagements? Have you figured out what your strategy will be?
Well, I really want to work at the highest levels because what I've noticed is that it's environmental factors and factors like that that are really pushing people in that direction. So when I say that, I talk about potholes when I do speaking engagements. Potholes are trauma, and people find their way to a toxic identity, community, and purpose because of those potholes in life. So what we need to do as a society is not just a social media campaign that will fix this. This is too ingrained. We need to look at access to healthcare, access to mental health care, access to education, job security, things that typically people can't find and then find alternatives to fill in those voids. And sometimes those are very toxic alternatives.
Okay. There are still, though, people who are already deeply immersed in hate groups. And to the extent that they are looking for help getting out, where can they turn? Because your group has been one of the few resources available to them. What are the alternatives? What are you telling supporters to do right now when your project shuts down at the end of the year?
Yeah, and this is something we've had to think about very deeply because obviously we are working with people and sometimes those engagements last years. And what I tell people who are looking for avenues is the same thing I would tell people I've worked with for years, is I connect them to professionals that already exist in their communities. And I'm talking about mental health therapists, counselors, job trainers, life coaches, even parents or teachers and school counselors. We have to learn to utilize the professionals that already exist in our communities.
Yeah, worth pointing out that the Free Radicals Project was really just the latest iteration of work you've been doing for a longer time. When you wrote about your decision to close the project down a few weeks ago, though, what kind of response did you get from supporters?
Well, I think overwhelmingly the support has been very, very positive. But I think people understand that there are things that need to happen. A shift in focus needs to happen so that that pipeline is essentially cut off in the future. But also people recognize that doing this work is traumatic. Sitting in front of people to discuss their traumas, the things that happen to them in life, can also be a traumatizing effect on the people who listen. So I've learned quite a bit about secondary trauma and compassion fatigue and how to perform self-care to make sure that I don't go down another path where I might become vulnerable to being traumatized.
I see. How big of a factor was that? I mean, you've described a sort of a confluence of factors that led to this decision. You know, one is a desire to shift your focus maybe to earlier intervention. I know funding can always be a challenge, fundraising, especially during a pandemic when financial times can be tough for a lot of folks. But what about that personal toll that you're talking about?
Sure, and all of those things that you just mentioned are a factor and always something that we had to contend with. But, you know, in the work that I do and listening to the potholes that people develop in their life, you know, also can sometimes develop potholes in my life. So I haven't gotten to that point, but I've been very good about looking at self-care and making sure that I utilize the tools to practice self-care before I fall into any of those traps. Always focus on self-care, even as you're helping other people perform their own care.
Sure. I do want to ask just one more question about the financial component of the Free Radicals Project. I know that you did accept some donations as a 501c3, but you've written that you primarily self-funded based on fees that you would get from speaking engagements and that kind of thing, and that you sort of thought of that as kind of part of your penance for your own history as a neo-Nazi. I assume that you will continue to do some speaking tours and whatnot. Does that mean going forward you will just pocket that money, or will you pledge to devote it to some other cause? How are you going to treat that?
Yeah, and I think that that's something that I've never really talked about and most people don't know. But while we were a nonprofit organization that accepted donations, I self-funded this for most of the last 20 years through my speaking engagements and media projects and things like that. As far as what the future holds, I don't know yet, Callum. I think that remains to be seen.
So you've been doing this kind of work for almost 20 years. You've seen the dangers of extremism arguably rise over that period of time. What do you see as the principal threats right now?
Yeah, that's a really great question. I think that we are at a point for the first time, I think, in the last 20 years where we've started to understand what the problems are in our society. And I think that right now the new administration has a will to try and combat this. What I worry about, though, is that we are going to treat this problem of white supremacy almost the same way that we treated the war on drugs, where we are going to criminalize it and only go after the people who are, quote unquote, addicted to the ideology like they were addicted to a drug. And we won't go after the traffickers. We won't go after the propagandists who are enabling this and who are furthering people becoming radicalized. And I think that we need to be able to go to the source and metaphorically cut the head off the snake to make sure that future generations aren't being affected by this.
You said you're optimistic, though, that the new administration, relatively new administration, is committed to combating white supremacy. And I just want to drill down on a couple of their strategy points. One is calling for more aggressive hiring at intelligence agencies to try to, you know, screen government employees for ties to hate groups. We know, for example, at January 6th, there were actually some veterans, some members of police departments from across the country. So, what's your take on that kind of approach, and is it sufficient?
Well, I think we do have to do a better job of vetting people in positions of power and national security positions. You know, it almost seems like a yearly exercise where we find somebody who's been exposed as a member of a white supremacist organization. Certainly, we hear a lot about infiltration of law enforcement, and that was a strategy that was put forth by white supremacist leaders in the 80s and 90s as becoming a visible white supremacist was becoming a liability. They encouraged members, even people like me who were members in the 80s and 90s, to really blend in with society, to get jobs in law enforcement, to get jobs in prisons as prison guards, to run for office at the local level. And we're seeing a lot of that. So I do think that we are at a moment where we have to hold people accountable, because I do believe that redemption without accountability is just privilege, especially in terms of people who are coming out of these hate movements, who are trying to, in some cases, launder their image. So holding people accountable is very, very important. But, you know, what we saw happen on January 6th didn't happen in a vacuum. It was really just the tip of the iceberg of something that has been brewing for a very, very long time. So I think that as they pursue the January 6th insurrection, holding people accountable at the highest levels is going to be very important to really putting a stop to this movement that is growing exponentially in recent years.
Christian Piccellini is the founder of the Free Radicals Project, which is preparing to close at the end of the year. Christian, thank you.
Thank you, Callum.